Committee, I welcome you with open arms.
Is that so? How late do you stay open?
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I am Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we are really excited to be back with you. We had a little bit of a hiatus there.
Yes, but for the regular listeners, you are not just hearing normal Tom Hush from WGN. You are now hearing newly minted full-time producer at WGN, Tom Hush. Yes. So let's get a little round of applause here.
Woo!
For the people in the studio.
Big congrats.
That's right.
Thank you very much. That's the main explanation for where we've been the last couple of weeks. It's been a very big whirlwind. Yes, I am now the full-time producer of the Nick DiGilio show here at WGN. So you can hear me pretty much every week morning from 1 to 5 a.m.
Every week morning.
Every week morning.
Same week morning day, same week morning time.
Yes. So if you're ever up at that time looking for something to listen to, you can listen to us. Of course, you can hear all of that podcasted by yours truly on WGNRadio.com in addition to No Coast. But it's good to be back in the studio doing this.
I know. Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful day.
Yeah, until the snow comes tomorrow, Sunday. Uh-huh. You're hearing this on Monday.
Bit of a time traveler's experience.
Yeah, so the weather is good right now, probably not so good next couple of days.
You can also hear both of us introducing and moderating Q&A for Nick Alonzo's new film Decaf Don.
Yes, it's going to be April 26th over at 6740, which is same building as the new 400 theater.
Yeah, there's a new like micro cinema space that just recently got started.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff. It's going to be part of Cinema Obscura, so you'll see our good friend John Davies there. It's going to be a lot of fun. Check out, you know, if you haven't listened to it already, make sure to check out my conversation with Nick, from our good friend Nick Alonzo, and also the cinematographer of the film, Greg. It was really fun chatting with them, and I'm really excited about Decaf Don, really excited to have them showing it at the Micro Cinema. We've got a really great interview coming up, going to be talking with the cast, some of the cast, and the writer-director of A Missed Connection, a new film that we're really excited about. We haven't gotten to see the whole thing, but we've gotten a great preview, and it looks like a really fantastic piece, a really fantastic film. So we'll be talking a little bit about that, but we want to start off with a piece of Chicago pop culture news. We are talking about indie cinema, as we always do, but first we're going to talk about like the single largest franchise in the history of fucking franchises.
Yeah.
Star Wars Celebration happening right now here in Chicago, and yesterday we were treated to the reveal of not only the title of the new Star Wars film, but also the first teaser of the new Star Wars film. It's going to be called Rise of Skywalker.
The Rise of Skywalker. Yes.
That's a really perfect opportunity to introduce our guests here, who probably know more about the situation than I do, honestly. So we have Matthew Weinstein, who is the writer-director of A Missed Connection, Kimberly Vaughn, who is also who's an actor in A Missed Connection, and Tyler Pistorius, who is the other actor.
Yes.
Yes. Everyone say hello.
Hello there.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good.
It's going good.
Welcome to the beautiful Skyline studio here at WGN Radio.
You certainly cannot beat the view here.
Yeah.
Chicago's definitely living up to its reputation as the windy city today, especially.
Yeah, yes. No kidding.
It's a windy one, but plenty... plenty of windfall of conversation.
Whoa. As you mentioned the title of the new Star Wars, I mean, they might as well just call it, like, no one's ever really dead. That's what it should be called.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's a direct line in the trailer, too. Yeah, no one's ever really gone. And then, for those who haven't seen the trailer yet, I mean, what are you doing?
Like, I have not seen the trailer.
I have not seen the trailer, and I could care less about Star Wars.
Kimberly and I are a little bit like Yoda in our self-imposed exile.
Yes.
Of, you know,
yes. I am not
Or like Luke Skywalker, The Last Jedi, like that self-imposed exile.
Exactly.
On, whatever that island is, like Octu or Achu or something like that.
You know more about it than I do.
Yeah. But, I actually was at the Star Wars Celebration yesterday, mm-hmm. and that was when they had the panel with Stephen Colbert as the host and everything
really?
Like that. Yeah, it was... and then they brought on Anthony Daniels and Billy Dee Williams, and then the majority of the principal cast. Mark Hamill was conspicuously absent from it, although I know he's supposed to be in the movie. He's credited at least on IMDb. I'm not sure if he was unavailable for whatever reason, or because
he's too busy voicing Chucky in the new Chucky movie.
Yeah, that is. Seriously. Oh, that's right. He's playing Chucky. Yeah, or if it was because of like the whole PR thing from The Last Jedi, because he did kind of. He's a little bit frank about how he felt about the portrayal of Luke Skywalker. So
right.
He's like, maybe not have him on the press campaign for this. But that's purely conjecture. That's all hypothetical.
Now, I want to ask about the reaction to it, because obviously the last Star Wars movie just in cinema culture represented an interesting breaking point for one of the largest fan bases in, in pop culture.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. People, I watched the live stream and it seemed like people were really, really excited. But granted, we're taking the sample size of people at mm-hmm. Star Wars Celebration.
Right.
Folks who are generally considered super fans of this franchise.
I mean, it was a crazy energy there. Like it to the point where it was kind of infectious in a way. Mm-hmm. And in regards to The Last Jedi, like I'm kind of in the middle with that movie. Like I'm not in the extreme love camp or in the raw seething hatred camp.
It's damn, what's like, that like to have a measured opinion about
it's
a movie?
It's actually a really lonely, lonely place.
I'm actually in the same boat as him, because there are things about it I like and there's things I really don't. And I've only seen it all the way through twice, and that was mm-hmm. when I saw it in theaters. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting just how personal I feel people, really take to Star Wars. Mm-hmm. I guess it's just a nostalgic thing. And I guess to some degree, I'm more agnostic when it comes to Star Wars. I don't, mm-hmm. I like to watch the movies. I look forward to the movies, but I wouldn't find myself necessarily getting into a deep discussion in regards to myth and lore and what mm-hmm. have you.
Yeah, it's hard to be a super fan of something that, to my perspective, just seems to be sort of run-of-the-mill science fiction, I guess. Like, the original movies just seem very boilerplate sci-fi.
I guess what's mm-hmm. funny is when the year that Last Jedi came out, I was just like, I mean... it could go either way, but I'm just glad that Blade Runner 2049 was awesome.
Yeah, right?
Yes.
We got that.
Yeah, we got that.
Which is good.
And although that one didn't do so well financially, yeah. I feel like time is going to be very kind to it.
Time's already being kind to it.
Sure. Absolutely.
We're still talking about it.
Now, mm-hmm. Kimberly, you are not a fan of Star Wars. Have you seen any of them?
I've seen some. I cannot remember the names.
That's all good.
And I've fallen asleep a lot. The one that I did like is Revenge
of the Sith?
I think, yes, with Anakin, with him turning into Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's
sexy.
And nobody liked it.
Actually, I might be telling tales out of school, but I know I wasn't there, but my eldest brother, he lives here in the West Loop. He and his now wife and some of their friends, and I think her cousin, they went to go see The Last Jedi late at night at the Block 37. I believe his wife had fallen asleep.
Yes.
Because, it was late, and it's a very long movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, no problems. No problem with that. I fall into the extreme love category for The Last Jedi, but that's neither here nor there. Mm-hmm.
What do you think of the line, "Let's go Chrome Dome"?
Give it to
what
me.
Does it mean?
Like, literally injected into my veins.
It's in reference to a character, Darth Phasma, I think.
Captain Phasma.
Captain.
Who's played by Gwendolyn Christie,
yep.
who we all know that is Brienne of Tarth of Game of Thrones.
And true.
Brienne of Tarth, I believe Brienne of Tarth could probably kick the asses of everybody in, especially these new Star Wars movies or even like the old ones.
Yeah, she's a really awesome, imposing figure.
Yeah, she is.
Well,
yeah.
Pretty much everything I've seen her in.
Well, what is curious to me about Star Wars or any fan base in general is, I always get really annoyed by fan entitlement. I feel like with any sort of franchise, I mean, we could be talking about anything and people always be feel a certain level of entitlement. And, you know, the Last Jedi was such a divisive thing. There was kind of a schism throughout the entire fan base that generally rallied behind the Force Awakens. Yes, people admitted that it was basically a remake of the original, but it was still really good. It was in terms of it was entertaining. It had all the hallmarks of the series, blah, blah, blah. But right now there's this rallying cry that Disney, this global conglomerate that has now subsumed 20th Century Fox into its ranks, has somehow ruined this franchise. And I couldn't help but, you know, 20 years ago this year, Star Wars returned yet again, you know, this is for the first time, really, after its original three movies. And,
just to ruin all of the baby boomers' favorite memories.
Right. Well, and it was incredibly toxic rhetoric around it. People were using, and I apologize for using the term, but you had a bunch of baby boomers and Gen Xers saying that George Lucas raped their childhood, which I think is grossly inappropriate and so toxic to use for a fucking science fiction franchise. But now we're hearing some of the same thing in terms of Disney has somehow ruined Star Wars. And I wanted to just point out to the entire Star Wars fan base, literally 20 years ago this year, you were saying the exact same thing, and you were saying it, but it just wasn't Disney. So I don't see how Disney has done anything different than what happened 20 years ago.
And it's interesting, like, I've also seen, like, people retroactively recognize the prequel trilogy as being not so bad or being superior compared to these new movies. I mean, for me, my favorites are Empire Strikes Back and Star Wars, which is also known as A New Hope, and then followed by Return of the Jedi, and then the rest is, like, kind of, like, hit or miss for me, but that's just me. After seeing the trailer for The Rise of Skywalker, I am kind of curious to see where it's going to go. I feel like it's probably going to recreate a lot of beats from Return of the Jedi, like, because you see, like, the fallen Death Star, I think it's supposed to be the second one. And I think that's where, like, Sheev Palpatine, one of the greatest characters in motion picture history, is going to be residing, although he died in Return of the Jedi and stuff. But it's weird that, like, with the existence of these new movies, like, people are, like, either changing their minds about the prequels or something like that, which that's something I really don't get. It's usually the same people who were saying the same things about the prequels back when they came out. I mean, in regards to the prequels, it's like, if, you know, for me, they just didn't work. Like, there were some good ideas in there, but overall, it just didn't quite work
for
me.
There were some good moments in the prequels, but they ultimately...
Anything with Palpatine, that's a great moment. That's all gold.
Some of the action was good, but I just think it was missing not just, like, the heart and the humor and the spirit, but also, like, I guess this goes to a technical thing, but, like, the latter two prequels were shot digitally, unlike the other films, which were all shot on film.
I think a core problem with the prequels is that there's not much of a mystery because we know what's going to happen.
That's the problem with prequels. That's something that even someone like Sir Ridley Scott kind of missed the point of when he went and did Prometheus and then Alien Covenant.
Two movies that I thoroughly enjoy.
Me too. Honestly, me too.
I haven't seen Alien Covenant yet.
I'll do the fingering.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that line.
Just imagine if Alien were actually just like a romantic era science fiction. So Alien if it were written by Mary Shelley, and it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to look at it. But my problem is the original Alien, it's just, you know, a haunted house movie. And I just like the idea that the first time you come across these creatures, it was when they landed on LV-246. That's the name of the planet, right?
Right. 426.
Yeah, 426. Okay, I was close. But come on, man.
You get your facts right.
Yeah.
Isn't
either way? Before
we got to get these made up number assignments for made up planets.
This is
correct.
Serious
otherwise, who
business
are we?
People.
Yeah. Before we get too into the weeds here, I
had one question, Tom. Okay. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Yes,
but I think just a good way to maybe wrap this all up would be: do you guys think that with these franchises that have gone back to kind of explain things that maybe didn't need explaining, would it have been better to maybe just leave them alone?
Yes, absolutely. Well, certain things just don't need to be explained. Like, never underestimate the power of the imagination.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So
I like it better. The first time you saw Han Solo in a movie was when he sat down and he said, "Hi, I'm Han Solo, Captain Millennium Falcon."
That's all you need to know.
That's, I mean, you're
he did the Kessel Run and blah blah. Who gives a shit?
Like 12 parsecs or something like
and
that.
And then they made a movie out of a throwaway line.
That was That was the only part of that movie that I liked. So
Now there's a meme that generated from Solo where it's young Solo saying, you know, or young Lando saying, "I'm going to get my ship back," and Han says, "Over my dead body." And then it shows,
you see older Lando flying the Falcon and he's got the Skywalker trailer.
Gotcha, bitch.
which I'll admit, that moment in the trailer did make me smile.
I'm looking forward to seeing Lando again. Mm-hmm.
We'll I will say, like, with the whole like notion that this is being called the Rise of Skywalker, like I said, although I'm somewhere in the middle with The Last Jedi, I'm curious as to like how this film is going to like answer the questions that were raised with The Last Jedi, and perhaps like if it explains it in a way that is organic and makes sense, then I could probably like kind of look back on The Last Jedi with a little bit more appreciation. Like I said, I don't hate the movie. It's just that there are parts of it that really work, and then like at the same time, there's a little bit too much bathos in it. Like there's some serious moments, and then all of a sudden, it's like undercut with a joke.
Yeah. Sure, yeah,
the marvelization of Star Wars has begun.
True. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I also agree. Not everything needs to be explained. I still don't know where babies come from. So
I can tell you. That's why I'm here, right?
We'll explain that. Yeah,
Kimberly, don't do this. Just
if these mics were capable of being removed from the thing, that would have been a mic drop moment.
So, all right, let's
you, Kimberly, for providing a perfect segue into
a misconnection.
About a misconnection.
Yeah.
A misconnection, new film. Again, we have Matt Weinstein, writer and director. We have Kimberly Vaughn, one of the stars, and also Tyler Pistorius, one of the stars. Matt, why don't you take us through what is a misconnection?
A misconnection is a short film, and it's essentially a present tense story about reconnecting and going over the past. It's essentially two former college friends that randomly meet up at a coffee shop during a long winter night, and they reconnect.
A very simple sort of capsule story, and
very character and dialogue driven.
Yes, and when did you write this film?
Late 2012.
Wow.
I know, and it's funny because I've had the script written and I've been trying to get it off the ground and get it made in the intervening years. But ultimately, this is, you know, I think that you just kind of take an inventory of what transpires and the time that passed between initially writing it and getting it made and getting it just about, you know, completely finished. Mm-hmm. It really helped as far as the writing and the script because there were so many things that were allowed to be explored and ultimately enhanced the final script, at least before production. And it just continued to be enhanced as we got further along, you know, into production and even in editing.
So we met at the Women of the Now showcase about a year ago, and we just kind of happened to be sitting next to each other, which is where we initially exchanged information and everything. And you said that you were still working on this. Do you feel like the extra time that you got to put into doing this has helped turn out? Did you like change anything? If you didn't have that time, do you think that it would have become a, you know, kind of a dumb question maybe, but just a less of a finished product?
Well, actually, at that point, we had shot the movie and it was at the point, you know, assembled and edited. There was still some fine tuning left, and that's really what took place over that summer. And really the time since then was just to get the color grade, the mix, well, the music, then the mix, and just get that as perfect as we can get it. And I mean, there's still some minor tweaking to happen, but I mean, I feel it's at a place that I am really excited to show people at. And I mean, I could talk for hours, but I wouldn't be sitting here talking about it if I wasn't, you know, if I didn't have Tyler and Kimberly here to make the movie. And that's how it turned out as well as it did. In addition to a lot of contributions, I mean, I'll name drop Megan St. John, who's a producer, Tom Kinsel, who's the cinematographer, and Andrew Smith, who's also the assistant cameraman and the editor, Mark Bartels, who did the music and the sound mix, and Pascal Palicki, who is not only done the sound on set, but also an executive producer.
Yes.
We're always like amazed at the amount of man and, well, people power that
it
takes
entire
to
village.
Get exactly that it takes to actually turn out a movie. So this, and again, you showed us about 6 minutes of the film, and it definitely comes across. It's a very intensely personal thing for you. What was it like involving Kimberly and Tyler what led you to make the choice to involve them in the film?
It was always Tyler from the beginning.
Oh man,
Mike, that's a twist. It was always Tyler.
It was.
Turns out they were all already Tyler.
So again, Tyler, tell us about your involvement in the film and getting on board.
Well, because Matt and I, because we've been friends for a number of years now, and it was around like 2012, 2013 that Matt, you have been talking to me about wanting to make A Misconnection at some point later in your career, and this is before we did The Gun Equation, and this is around the time that we did the 21-hour project with Expats Theater, which is sadly no longer with us. And yeah, as I continue to read each new draft, and just kind of looking at the character of Jake, it was interesting. Like I stopped at a certain point, I stopped looking at the character as like, oh, this is like possibly an extension of Matt. I don't know for sure. Cause you know, when it comes to creation, like you're not always what you make. So, and then I just look at the character of Jake and just see like, how can I identify with this person? It's like, oh, let's see. I remember in college as being kind of, you know, awkward and shy and uncomfortable in my own skin, and couldn't really express how I felt. And so I would basically just be kind of withdrawn, and then just to kind of look back, it's like, oh, perhaps if I had tried this, maybe my life would be completely different from where it is now. And then I used to look back on that with like a lot of regrets, and then of course the older I get, it's like, no, like I'm where I'm at now for a reason. And the rest of my fate is not certain. And that's one of my big draws to the character of Jake. And I was really interested in tapping into that.
Well, let's touch a little bit on the events of the film. So basically, Tyler, your character Jake is in a coffee shop. His life is almost literally strewn across a stool. You know, you've got a briefcase full of papers. We're not really sure like what it is or anything like that, but you are actively pouring like what, whiskey or something into your coffee.
Yeah, spiking his coffee with whiskey. So it's like, okay, this person is clearly needing to wet his beak a little bit. Yes. In order to get through the day.
Things are rough. And from there, enter Kimberly's character. She is supposed to be meeting someone for dinner, and things, you know, don't exist. You get a phone call, all of a sudden that goes out the window, and you wind up in the coffee shop with Tyler, and a conversation ensues. Kimberly, tell us a little bit about your character and your involvement in the film.
Yeah. Well, first off, I want to say, piggybacking off what Tyler said, I thought this was completely personal, and I kept asking Matthew, I was like, okay, tell me, like, this is you, right? This is totally personal. Like, you wrote a letter to a girl that you really wanted, but you never sent it, and I just kept asking you about it, but I still think it's personal, but did you ever answer my question?
I think I might have a long time ago.
Yeah. We have an opportunity
a little buzzed, but yeah, my character, I feel like, is a bit close to self, where it's just like easily disappointed, just coming in and then being like excited, and then her date just falls through, and it's just like, well, I'm already here, I just might as well just stick it out. Then I see him, Tyler's character, and then we have a great conversation. Then I find out that he liked me this whole time, and it's just like, again, disappointed, like, why weren't you just upfront?
Right.
Yeah, real about the situation. So I felt like it was a little bit close to me.
I mean, have you personally experienced that in your life, where you have a quote-unquote misconnection?
I think so. I think I have.
Probably be hard not to, honestly, right? I think it's a pretty... It's a thing that a lot of people probably share. Pretty universal situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's completely missed. Like, once it's like out there, and it's usually too late for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I thought was going to happen with the end of this, right? Didn't you change?
The ending did change. Yes. It changed even during production. And
yes.
I mean, one day you'll see. I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because the change of... I'm not going to describe what the change is, but I remember once we felt like we got enough takes, I asked Matt, do you mind if we do one more? And I wanted to try something a little different. And well,
that's in the movie.
That's what you see in the movie.
It was fucking brilliant.
And was this something that you brought yourself, or did you clear it with him before you did it?
He had no idea what I was going to do. And of course, while we were making this, because the thing is, like, filmmaking, like the days are long. And it's always important to like come in with like a good sense of humor. And Matt and Kimberly have both come intimately acquainted with my morbid, fucked up sense of humor. Sometimes, which will come up during a take. And and so, of course, I can't imagine how terrified Matt must have been when I was during the last day of shooting and the last shot. was like, hey, Matt, can I try something? Because Matt probably was like, oh, God, is he going to, like, say something really inappropriate or something like that? Is he going to do something completely out of character? What's he going to do? But the thing is, like, the moment came to me as we were filming this and just kind of seeing, like, how this was all playing out. And I was thinking, oh, how's this going to look? How's this going to read? What if I tried it this way? And so I didn't tell him what it was. But then we do the scene, and I do what I do. And then I think Matt called cut after I go, that's it.
Check the gate. That's in the picture. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a wrap. With this sort of story, obviously it's a very intimate story of two people going over the past and their current situations. And I wanted to get a read, Kimberly and Tyler, what was it like working with each other as these characters? Were there any particular difficulties establishing your guys' relationship, or was it kind of an easy sort of way to step into the roles?
I felt like it was really easy to step into the roles and to work with Tyler. I mean, mm-hmm. You don't have to say the same for me.
I was about to say the same, exactly.
Okay, so good.
Yeah.
I had so much fun working with Tyler. I know, like, we would always just, like, laugh and just always, it would just always seem natural, mm-hmm. Especially during the late hours of shooting. We're just, like, mm-hmm. you know, out of it, slap happy.
Yeah.
But coming into character, it honestly just felt natural. I felt... Sometimes there was a language where I was like, this is not what I would say, but I guess, of course, with acting, like, this is what the character would say. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of that between Matt and I. But
yeah. I mean, for me, it didn't feel like work at all, working with Kimberly. Like, it was so much fun. It felt really easy. I felt very comfortable because she's completely on top of her game. I mean, Kimberly, I thought you were brilliant in this. And for me, it's just sort of like, oh, I can relax now. It's like, and all I got to do is just make sure that I'm constantly present in the moment between action and cut, and that's all that matters.
Yes.
So
it takes a special kind of person to be involved in the film industry, because it's a pretty unforgiving craft from what I can tell. And I think that it's a good opportunity to maybe talk a little bit about about your guys' histories with film, why you guys got into it, and why you guys are continuing to do it now. Because, I mean, if you look at, just on paper, what you guys were doing, you're working like 12-hour days, you know, in you filmed it in the winter, in Chicago winter, which is one of the worst winters in the entire country that you could probably deal with. So what was the impetus for you guys to become actors, and Matthew, for you to become a writer and a director? We'll start with Kimberly.
I didn't know at first. I'll make this pretty brief. I didn't know at first I wanted to act. I just knew I wanted to be on TV and be seen. So I went to Columbia College, and then I took an improv class, and then I was introduced to Second City. So I work at Second City on the main stage, and I mostly do theater. I mostly did straight plays at, like, Jackalope, other storefronts. And then getting into film, like, it was so great to have Matthew, because he was just like, I saw you in another film that I did for one of your friends.
Dan Marcus.
Dan Marcus.
Pleasure.
Come on the show, God. Dan.
He's in L.A., but...
He's so
give him a little
sweet.
Shout out nonetheless.
Yes.
Fly out here and come on the show.
Yeah, so Matthew saw me in that, and then he was just like, okay, let's get you. I don't think I auditioned either. I don't remember shit.
It sounds like it was a while ago.
It was a while ago.
We had an initial meeting and then another meeting where I wanted you to meet Tyler.
Yes, and how mm-hmm. we read together. Okay, yep. Yes.
But there was never like actually official like just audition.
Yeah. So thank you. That was really such a blessing to just go into it and have that opportunity. So I'm still trying to get more involved in like TV and film and be mm-hmm. more comfortable, because on stage I feel like it's fine, but on camera I'm like,
okay. Well, it's a totally different realm, you know. It's in on stage you have an audience to feed from.
Yeah.
It's, you know, your actions are going to be a lot bigger because you're playing to a room, whereas, you know, on the camera you're doing things that are very subtle. And even in the brief amount of footage that we've gotten to see from A Misconnection, both you and Tyler do have a great ability to capture smaller things that translate really well on the camera. And
it really excited us.
See that.
It feels like when you do small things, you're like, am I even doing anything? Like, mm-hmm. this is shit.
Is it being captured?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the viewer is getting every single frame of it. And it really works, and it's a beautiful looking film, by the way.
Yeah, seriously.
I give all props to Tom, who shot the hell out of it.
Yeah, it looks great. You know, what was your history in terms of getting into directing?
I've just always loved movies, and I've always been fascinated by storytelling, and I just little by little got involved, and I just the love of seeing something from its inception all the way to its completion. There's just something thrilling about that. And it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. Mm-hmm. And you learn patience as well as stamina because it's going to be a grind at times, but patience also, cause it's going to be, you know, there's a lot of wait, you know, hurry up and wait in between the big peaks. You know, as you've touched upon earlier, you know, when we met last year, I was still working on it. And it was at that point that production had wrapped and we were into editing. So, I mean, it's all for a good purpose, though. It's all for making the best possible version. And I get a thrill out of seeing something that you, especially when you conceive of it, the idea, and seeing it completed, there's no greater thrill than to eventually show it in front of a large audience on a big screen. It's humbling, actually, because you're spending most times watching it on a small screen, you know, whether it's a laptop, a computer screen, a big screen TV, but to show it on like a big theater screen in front of hundreds of people, there's no greater thrill.
And writing can be a bit of a heart-wrenching process. So to know that you really spent the time to make sure that you created what need to give the story, do service to the story that you were trying to tell, I think that's really important.
It helped having both Tyler and Kimberly, because that's how certain things were enhanced before production, you know, ideas that they had. And even, you know, people like Megan had ideas as well. I originally wrote the script as a means of giving myself something to direct. I had a directing project back in 2012 that fell apart. And I wrote this as like a means of like, well, this is something I know. I'll write this and I can direct it. It could be simple because it's dialogue. You know, they say dialogue is cheap, but things just kind of happened the way they did. And eventually I made a short film called The Gun Equation with Tyler. And what was great about that film was while I didn't initially write it, I did some uncredited rewriting on it just to fine tune and sort of enhance and expand some things. But what was great about The Gun Equation, not to put it up on a pedestal, but it relied on pure cinema. It relied on visuals, sound effects. There was, besides some voiceover, there was no dialogue. So it was a natural progression, I felt, to go from something like that, which showed, you know, some visual panache, and be like, okay, let's do something a little bit simpler, but, you know, a different challenge nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. Well, dialogue is always a difficult thing because you're always in danger of falling into something that seems disingenuous or something that seems like overly constructed.
Hell. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You know, even for a film, like, let's say, you know, someone like Quentin Tarantino is, love him or hate him, is often pointed to as a person that can write a certain style of dialogue. Or personally, my favorite dialogue is written by someone like Diablo Cody. Mm-hmm. That is easy to follow, but still stylized and doesn't feel completely out of place. Or you could take the Linklater route, which is like so naturalistic that it basically isn't even written. Right. It's like people just kind of talking and trying to ride a line between something that is that flows and you know, feels natural while still telling a story. As you said, what was it? Expositional hell. It's so difficult because there's so many movies that I watch where I'm just like, you can see the cogs turning,
right?
Mm-hmm. And
we got to explain this. Let's just throw it in an actor's mouth.
Yeah, and it's not even stylized to the point of being cool or like, you know, like, yes, I understand that this is movie dialogue, but it's rad. Or as naturalistic as like, oh, it seems like they're coming up with it on the spot. Mm-hmm. Was there something that you drew on inspirationally for A Misconnection that, you know, style-wise in dialogue?
Well, kind of, but I'm actually surprised that you didn't mention Aaron Sorkin.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Well, no.
Well,
kidding.
I mean, you didn't
there's
have
a reason for that.
Yeah, I love Aaron Sorkin.
Just rewatched Steve Jobs last night.
I really like that.
That's the great
one with Fassbender, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I love a good walk and talk. Yeah. I'm a big fan of The West Wing. But is that? I mean, I like Sorkin a lot, and he's one of those guys that like makes all his characters kind of like a certain level of intelligence. Like they're so much quippier than any human being actually is in real life, but it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so But I would say for a misconnection, again, from the amount that I've seen, to all the listeners, we have not seen the full film, but to the amount I've seen, it never feels like I'm watching a movie. I feel like I'm really watching a couple of people just talking about an actual experience that they've had. Obviously, credit to Kimberly and Tyler, but also credit to the dialogue, because, you know, it can definitely, you know, something like that can veer into melodrama. You know, lots of shouting, or you know, people just saying like, "You're breaking my heart."
Yeah,
you're tearing me apart, Lisa. Yeah.
And I will say this: even from the little bit that we did get to see, I thought that there was a night. I might just be overanalyzing it a little bit, but I think that there was a good. You struck a good balance between the people, you know, like Kimberly on the phone with the person that stood her up, and Tyler, you know, and Tyler and Kimberly's conversation in the coffee shop. But I thought that there was a good situation where you were kind of explaining things without actually saying them. Like when Tyler is going through the briefcase and he pulls out the piece of paper that says, "It doesn't matter." Is that the line? I can't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
"It doesn't matter." And he closes it and he starts drinking. And then when he's speaking with Kimberly and she asks why he stopped writing, and he just says that exact thing. So I thought that there was kind of a cool, like, the innards of the briefcase kind of representing and showing the audience what is kind of going on inside Tyler's mind. It's a little bit muddied, you know, it's a little bit run over and everything, and rumpled up and disheveled. And I thought that that was a nice way to represent how, you know, what Tyler's mind state is in that moment.
Well, thank you.
Well, Matt is a very good friend of mine, and he knows me very well. And yes, my mind is quite disheveled.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, talking about Tyler the actor, yes. not the character he is portraying.
I just loved how you described that. Yeah. It's like that's actually really funny.
So, I mean, obviously, you've touched on your past with Matt and the stuff that you've worked on, but mm-hmm. What were you doing prior to that? Like, what got you into acting, Tyler?
Well, like Matt, I just grew up with the movies. Like one of the things that I would always thumb through that my parents had was the TV Guys, because we had a DirecTV, and this is back in the early 90s when we first had DirecTV, so that was like a really big deal. We had like
did you have like the giant dish?
Oh my god, it was massive with like with all types of HBO channels and Cinemax and Showtime, and we then had like the Independent Film Channel, and then like there was whenever Stars was a brand new thing. And so, and I would check the TV Guides and look into movies like, okay, which one's got like 4 stars or 3 stars or something like that. That was sort of how I started. But then as I got older, I started like getting into things like the Criterion Collection and kind of paying attention to certain actors. Like one of my favorite actors growing up was Gary Oldman. And so like anytime he did a movie, I had to watch it. I even watched Tiptoes just because he was in it. Do not watch Tiptoes. And then when I was a teenager, my parents had they basically had like a Christmas light and Christmas tree display in their house, where we had like crowds of people coming in to check them out. And then out of nowhere, I just started going into this whole spiel about how I put up all the trees, I did all the lights, I described all the ornaments, and I would go as far as to say, and I had no help from my parents, which was all complete and utter lies. And my parents just looked at me as like, who is this?
He's a visual storyteller.
Like what happened to my son? Like, I've never seen him do this, because I was always like a bit more quiet and reserved, and then something just like came out of me right then and there. And then I think is whenever I started to realize like, oh, I can actually entertain people and like put on something that I'm not. Oh, this is kind of fun. And so then I would do theater in high school. Then that led to my time at NIU, which is where I met Matt. I did theater there. And then I did a number of shows in Chicago, and then I started to graduate more towards being in front of the camera, which was what I've always wanted to do. Although I never went to train for acting on the camera particularly, one of the things that I always notice in terms of like where the camera placement is like, oh, if the camera is capturing this much of my face, this is how much I need to give. It's like I don't have to do anything in my arms, I don't have to do anything in my back, just what happens in the face, that's all that matters. And that's going to be able to read. So it's like, this is how close the audience is compared to on the stage, where you have an audience that's like, you know, even sometimes as far as like 100 feet away from you, or even further than that. It's like, okay, that's how much you have to play to it. So, and
Were there any particular performances growing up that you saw on your litany of channels? You know, you mentioned Gary Oldman. Were there some other performances that you said, I want to incorporate that? This is acting. Because I think whether you're a director, cinematographer, actor, what have you, everybody has these different touchstones that they's like, oh, this is what acting is. Or this is what directing is. What were yours?
My favorites as a kid were Robert Mitchum and The Night of the Hunter. I was also a fan of both Ingrid Bergman and Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca. And as a kid, like when it came to some of the more contemporaries, Gary Oldman in like The Professional or Sid and Nancy was one of my favorites. And in high school, I was on a bit of a Daniel Day-Lewis kick, although I never approached...
Like a My Left Foot kind of kick?
My Left Foot. I like My Left Foot, and I had a soft spot for Last Mohicans as well.
Oh,
and
nice.
Especially like, given that was like the film he did afterwards. Now, I never approached a character the way that he does, because like, I don't need to be these people like 24/7.
You're not method?
No, I'm not method. In fact, there are certain characters who I really would rather not take home with me. Because, one of the characters I played before we did A Misconnection was, you mentioned Pascal, we did this movie called Path of Egress. And in that character, I play like this guy who wants to be part of this this crew of underground crime and everything like that. And that's like, I don't want to ever take someone like that home with me, ever. Like, because the character's got to come off with the makeup. It's got to, you know, you become the character between action and cut. Like, I don't need to be this person afterwards. I could think about the character every day, for sure. And certain characters like Jake is like, oh, I do kind of see pieces of myself in there. So tapping into that, it could be either really easy or it could be really difficult because it's a little bit too close to home for you. But a lot of my favorite performances, oddly enough, came from people who like would just stay in those characters for months. Like I think like Daniel Day-Lewis lived out in the woods for like a few months.
Right.
And of course, the whole time I'm thinking, oh, say that man has spent a lot of time pooping in the woods.
Yeah.
A lot of time.
For a big old paycheck, too.
For a big paycheck. Yeah. Okay. All right.
The thing that always fascinates me when we're speaking with actors is how, and I'm sure Kimberly can touch on this as well, you mentioned, Tyler, that when you were a kid, you found that you could kind of express yourself through the expression of other characters that aren't yourself.
Right.
That might have nothing to do with you, might just be written by people like Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
What is it like to get on stage and feel as though you are expressing yourself and just feeling natural in front of a camera? Because I can't speak for Tom, but for me, that just seems like something that I just kind of want to understand that a little bit more.
There's something freeing about it because you know that whenever the camera is on you and then whenever you're portraying this character, like there's something freeing about the fact that what you're presenting is not really you. So in a way, you can kind of hide. You can kind of hide who you really are. At the same time, you have to make sure that whatever the character is going through is as believable and as honest as possible. So in a way, there can be something kind of cathartic about, oh, whenever you have to express pain or something like that, or sorrow, like there's some kind of catharsis in it, in that you know that the sorrow, no matter how real it is, it's not really coming from you. Like there's something really freeing, and there's something very... I don't know how it is.
Like the disposability of the role
exactly.
At the end of the day.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's like, okay, I just put that aside and I just go home as me and then go back to work the next day. And then once it's all done, said and done, it's like, all right, I can now say goodbye to this character. And I look forward to seeing them again in a different context when you put all the pieces together and you put it up on a big screen. So,
I believe as an artist that you always bring yourself into no matter what you do. So like that's why I was like, when Matt was writing his script and it seemed very personal, I was like, it seems like it's a part of you. And no matter what character I play, even in improv, no matter what sketch I write, it's always something from me. Even if the character is so far, even if I'm playing a white woman, I'm like, this character, there's some part of me in it. Mm-hmm. I think that's how I process things.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's dramatic and it's heavy, I'm always digging from something from me and how I can relate to this character. Because sometimes I feel like, and that's not for every actor, not saying right or wrong, but if I distance myself so far from that character where it's like I'm hiding myself, I feel like my audience knows.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they,
that's interesting.
Yeah.
They can tell it's not genuine.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Well, and obviously you mentioned that you were at Second City. One of is the most legendary improv institution probably in the entire country. what do you like to bring from your improv experience into your various roles, whether it be stage or screen?
Absolutely. Improv helped me play more. And to not just look at the words as like, okay, I need to memorize these lines. It's just more of just being, and actually playing with it more, where how would they say it this way or a different way? It's just allowing me to be free and fluid in my acting, I feel like, especially even mm-hmm. on screen or on stage, where it's like, I'll say my lines differently and I'll be like, that feels much better. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, because there's a certain level of play to all of this. And not to say that film is not a very tightly constructed thing. You know, there are shooting days, there are shooting schedules, things need to happen at a certain pace.
Yeah.
But it's always nice to hear from an actor, a director, whoever, that they feel that they are creating and playing and doing something different with each take, instead of just saying, well, we got the shot.
Yeah,
let's move on.
That's the thing too. And one thing I forgot to mention, in terms of like just the art of creating this character, is like, it's a great opportunity for me to get to understand somebody who isn't necessarily me. Mm-hmm. Now someone like Jake, I actually identify with on a number of levels. And so I empathize with them right away. And like, there are certain characters on the opposite side of the spectrum where like, oh, these are people who I would never want to associate with. These are criminals. These are mm-hmm. very bad people. But you know, at the end of the day, that character is human. Mm-hmm. And so that's where you gotta, like, that's where I have to find the humanity in him, and I have to express that through myself and then tap into my own humanity and just think, oh, perhaps if I was born under a different set of circumstances, I'd probably wind up making the exact same mistakes. Mm-hmm. Now, in regards to Jake, this character, it's like, oh, I've actually made a number of those mistakes in my own life. And so it's interesting to kind of revisit that mm-hmm. now that I'm a little bit older. And it made me think about it. And in a way, it kind of helped me kind of get work through some things, Matt. So thanks.
So, Matt, tell us a little bit about the release of this film. How soon can people see A Misconnection, and where can they see it?
Well, we're wrapping it up, and we have a second trailer, which we'll release very soon, as well as a one sheet, and then start the film festival submission process. Festivals here, like Midwest Independent, we're gunning for that.
And boy,
I know you've had Amy Guth on here, so
yeah, Amy's great. You know, and the Midwest Independent Film Festivals, I think, would be a great place for a great venue for this to be shown, because not just made by people who are in the community here, which is so important to amplify the voices here, but also there's a certain Midwestern melancholia to this. While it is a universal sort of thing, A Misconnection, people feel this sort of thing all the time. I don't know, just seeing it set in the Chicago winter,
right,
and with people who are familiar with the city. Like I said, a little bit of that Midwestern melancholy,
yeah,
that follows everybody, I think, during those winter months, all six of them.
Yeah, when those papers just tumble out of the briefcase, I was just like, yep.
Yeah, fuck.
That's what he says. He says fuck right at the beginning.
Yeah.
First slide of dialogue.
Get it right out of the way. So, I mean, and I know that the festival submission process is daunting.
It's, well, I've been through it before, and I've had this happen. You set yourself up for like this grand expectation, and you kind of find yourself let down, disappointed, because I think the reality is, and especially independent filmmaking, it's just there's so many submissions to festivals, and you just really don't have any control in regards to, I mean, I think it's only a matter of what you can do to help sort of stand out from the rest, but you know, all you can do is make the best film you can make and just accept that you have no control from there, really.
It does seem with festival submissions that it can almost literally be luck of the draw.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might just all of a sudden, and you might get accepted to a festival that you thought was just a total no-go. You'll like submit to, I don't know, like something in like Florida. What was it? I think Tallahassee Film Festival just
right.
happened. And you never know. And you know, it'll be very exciting to see the whole thing, the whole kielbasa. of a miss.
Thank you, Tom.
Is that not good enough for you?
That's not good enough for me, nor these fine people.
Ass.
All right.
All right. And until then, where can folks keep updated about A Misconnection?
Well, we have a Facebook page and an Instagram. Facebook is at A Misconnection. I think the A and the M and the C is capitalized in the Facebook page. And then on Instagram, it's at A Misconnection, all lowercase.
All right. And Kimberly, Tyler, where can folks, can, should poke folks follow
should
you?
Pokes?
Oh my God, yes, pokes. Follow me at, on Instagram at Suburban Black Girl. Black Girl has no vowels. And yeah, you can come see my Second City show. It's motherfucking day except for Monday.
Wait, seriously, you perform every single day except for Mondays?
Yes.
My goodness.
Yeah, so come.
Oh my God.
Just not on Monday.
Just not on Monday.
Which is today.
Go. I mean, if you haven't been to Second City, I definitely recommend it. It's like, again, one of the most legendary comedy institutions in America, and like
certainly the best in the city.
I forget, is Improv Olympic is completely different, right?
Yeah, I know, but they're great as well. And Annoyance.
Yeah, Annoyance Theater. I've been to, but. Second City is always fantastic. Tyler, what about yourself? Where can people follow you?
You can actually follow me at a number of places. On Instagram, there's my personal one, which is Sui, that's S-U-I, dot Rot, R-O-T, dot Sip, S-I-P. It's my last name spelled backwards.
Okay.
And, yes, so that's where you can find me.
Sui Rot Sip.
Sui Rot Sip, yeah, instead of Pistorius. And then I also have another Instagram and a Facebook page that you can follow. They're both under the handles Mollusk Movie, and that is a short that is currently in production right now. And actually, Mr. Weinstein over here is helping out with that. He's editing it, and he's also a production assistant on it.
Okay.
Actually, a number of roles that he's doing, because we're all having to wear a lot of hats on this one, and so.
Oh, it looks fucking great so far.
That's awesome.
No, thanks. And you can also find another Facebook page. It's Vital Indie Media. That's where you can. That's where I and my partner in crime, Boogaloo Ojeda,
legendary Lou,
all are going to be. Putting a lot of our attention on independent films, including but not limited to the ones that are made here in Chicago.
Fantastic. So. Fantastic. Well, thank you all so much. Remember, the film is A Missed Connection. That is written and directed by Matt Weinstein, and starring Kimberly Vaughn and Tyler Pistorius. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys all so much for coming in today. We really appreciate you spending your Saturday with us.
And thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, anytime. Okay. So just a reminder to everybody, Decaf Don, Q&A.
Intro.
Drinks?
Micro Cinema.
67.
Next to the 400. The new 400.
Not
the old one. The better one.
You've been listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I am Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we will see you all next week.